Previously.tv Podcast Network.
Whatever it is you want to talk about, we can talk about tomorrow. It can wait.
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 198 for the week of April 2nd, 2018. I am pre-internet travel agent David T. Cole, and I'm here with Suicide Locket Sarah D. Bunting.
Third Act Gulp.
KGBot Tara Ariano.
If you knew how tired I am, you wouldn't still be talking.
And Pull Out Car Stereo Stephen Falk.
From video games to math to hockey.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Extra Hot Great. We will get into it in just a second, but I just want to remind you that the Minis feed is now on its own, all by its lonesome. Make sure that you subscribe to it. Check the show notes or search Extra Hot Great Mini on iTunes or Google Play and subscribe today.
We are here to talk about the Americans, and our very special guest is Stephen Falk. Hello, Steve.
Hello,
guys.
Steve.
Wow.
Yay! Are we the only people on earth who still call you Steve? That used to be Steve's name on when he was a recapper on Television Without Pity, and I guess was generally your internet name, right?
Yeah, it was. My high school friends, my stoned high school friends came up with it.
Oh, good.
Because they thought somehow saying Steve was shorter than saying Steve. It is not.
Well, it saves them having to put their lips together, I guess. That's a time saver. We are here to talk about the Americans, the final season, and you set yourself the extremely difficult task of cramming how many seasons before this record?
I think I had to do 2.5.
Wow. And during that time, what else did you do?
Writing a season of television, had a child, moved. Yep. A couple things. I have a lot of thoughts about the Americans, but it's been my, I picked it as my treadmill show, which I hate running so much. And it is the slowest fucking show from scene to scene. So I'd be, and you're so aware of time when you're running, which again, I hate doing. And so I'd come to a scene at the Residentura. And I just want to kill myself. I had 4.5 minutes of reading.
That's a perfect segue, because as I was covering season 5 of The Americans, which was a normal length season, and we knew at the time it started that it was definitely the penultimate season. By that point, they had already announced that season 6 would be the end. But they gave themselves one full season of 13 episodes plus 10 more, which is the current season 6. And I felt if we could just briefly talk about season 5, every week I felt like it was going super slow because they knew they had all this time to fill. And so they were just taking their sweet ass time. And as a consequence, it felt to me going week to week like nothing was happening. But was that your experience when you were cramming? Did it feel like more action was happening because you were watching them back to back to back to back?
No, there wasn't a lot of action. I mean, I think my general feeling watching that show is awe and confusion over how the show still works, but kind of nothing happens. And the episodes in the main don't have their own kind of feel. They're just kind of stories that linger from week to week and maybe drop off for 5 weeks and then come back. It is a very glacial show, I think.
I don't know how you guys could be complaining about the pace of a show in a season that all revolved around strains of wheat. What's wrong with you guys?
Well, because it's better than Propellers.
That's
all right. Well, I'll say season 6 to me so far, and I've seen the first 3 episodes, although only one has aired, so there may be some incidental spoilers. We'll try to be careful. But to me, it's a return to form, and it already feels like it's moving faster for a couple of reasons. One is that it has, obviously, because it's the series is ending, but also the season seems to have as its endpoint this summit that's coming up. We've jumped forward from the season 5 finale 3 years to it's now fall of 1987. And I think that helps in that it returns, to answer your point, Steve, that it gives us a concrete goal that Elizabeth is trying to reach in each episode. She has a thing that she needs to accomplish. And so I think that helps to propel the action and also makes the macro story feel more manageable to me as a viewer. One of the things that frustrates me in these long, like, you know, myth arc shows is that you kind of lose the thread of like the big thing. Obviously in this show, it's always been simpler because America versus the USSR or the other way around, I guess, is an easy concept to wrap your mind around. But I already feel like there's more urgency in season six than there was in like all of season five. Would you agree with that? Or you still feel like it's as slow as season five was?
No, I think it's going a little quicker. I mean, I would never underestimate the show's ability to stretch out a storyline.
Yeah.
But I guess that brings me to a thought because I haven't even processed season five because I just finished it and launched right into six. But when you say losing the thread of the big story, what was the big story in five? Was it getting the kid back to Russia?
It was the wheat.
Oh, I just mean in like the overall story of, you know, trying to undermine the U.S. But yeah, I guess the story. But you're right. That was the problem with season five is that the wheat was a problem, although, you know, the food shortages were a real thing, obviously, that happened in the USSR that obviously would be of a concern to, you know, spy services. But yeah, the kid coming back and then all of a sudden he's just gone. It was like, what was the point of this cul-de-sac? Like that just went nowhere. It was so disappointing.
Yeah, I guess to get Tuan to realize he overstepped, but then he didn't seem to have. I mean, I really thought when the finale of season five, when they said to Tuan, you need to find a partner. You can't do this alone.
Yeah.
I thought it was going some. I thought we had a partner that we've already known for 5 years.
Yeah.
I thought that was the point, but I guess I was wrong.
I guess. Dave, what do you think of season six so far?
I agree that it seems a little bit more like the Americans than season five did. I think that, you know, having a endpoint is benefiting the Americans the same way it benefited Alias, which is just let's kick it into gear and start racing towards the endpoint. Mm-hmm. I am kind of enjoying the ascendancy of Paige as, you know, Spymaster Junior. I kind of feel like, and this is not informed by anything I've seen in the first three episodes, but I kind of feel like she will either be captured or eliminated this season. And that's going to be the big catalyst for huge changes within the household and perhaps their allegiances or perhaps, you know, them just sort of going for broke. That is my uninformed prediction for season six, that Paige will meet a bad fate either by capture or death.
Well, every season when we cover the Americans, we have to check in with Sarah, who does not watch it. This is finally the one that convinces her she needs to.
Sarah, how come you don't love your country?
Sarah, without the context of the boring season five episodes, other than me bitching about them to you, how has season six struck you thus far?
No change. I'm not going to start with this show. Like, I don't know what it is about Carrie Russell in this role, but I can't. It's not that she's not good, because she is, and it's not that I don't buy her, because I do. I mean, the thing that made me give up on the show, except for occasional check-ins for Extra Hot Grain
when we make you,
was that there was a lot of shit going on in the first few episodes that I just didn't buy, and it felt like a lot of fairly stagey dialogue and just like asterisked parallels and stuff like that. And also Paige is fucking annoying. This remains true.
Like when they had to steal the formula for the new candy Skittles that was driving the world mad.
My notes contain the phrase fucking Paige at least three times.
Aww.
Again. I just don't. And I also I find her relationship with Philip, it feels very real. And there's also that like meta aspect of them being together in real life.
Mm-hmm.
But she's so off-putting to like the way she is with him. And I'm sure this is the point and so on and so forth. But it just kind of feels like they're still in this emotional cul-de-sac, or he is. Mm-hmm. I thought the premiere was good. It moved right along. There was Tradecraft. So that was fun. Like, I always enjoy seeing a mailbox marked because then there's going to be a dead drop of some kind. And mm-hmm. I like that shit.
Yeah.
Because I'm indoorsy, and it's funny to me also that this guy playing Oleg is also playing basically the exact same role on Homeland.
Oh, really?
Oh. No.
I didn't know
and,
that.
Yeah, I think may actually be named Oleg also. Like, that's creative. And
it's like a Munch. He's just going from show to show.
Yeah. And Munch is also on Homeland. Because literally, who is not on Homeland right now? And yes, I understand how effed up it is that I still watch Homeland and enjoy it. And the Americans, I'm like, nah. But that it's how I feel. Sure. There's just some... Like, I get what they're trying to do, but it's like, I don't know. Her performance is like David Lynch. Like, I acknowledge that it's good and needs to exist, but it's not for me. You know what I mean?
Oh, I thought you meant she was like David Lynch when he was playing the talk show coach on Louis.
Louis C.K.
The most important thing about the premiere episode of season 6 for me was the lingering question, which I did not research. Is did Nerds 2, The Pickup Artist, Lesson Zero, and Wall Street all come out at the same time in 1987?
You know, as soon as I saw that, I thought, well, there is about 7 sites that are currently working on that article.
Because that's 2 Robert Downey Jr. movies at the same time.
That's true. That's
not it was
impossible.
A different world. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess so.
It was the Jude Law of his day. The Jude Law that one year of his day. yeah, Oleg, I'm glad they gave him something to do this season because I could not care about him any less in season 5. Every time they cut back to him, like, who can possibly care about Oleg and his troubled relationship with his parents and his
but his mom
dead
his
brother.
Mom but his mom cooked a lot. That was nice. She was always cooking.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, but do we like the actor? Are we glad he's still going?
I don't know. He's fine, I guess. As soon as they gave him full, you know, whatever it is, like full cast member status, it felt like they were already out of things to do with him.
Yep.
So I felt like they just kept him because they liked him.
The last time we talked about this, and I still agree. They just should have written him out when they wrote out Nina.
Yeah.
You know, that would be the end of it. He's not that pivotal of a character in this show. He is not a catalyst really for much, and it's weird that they haven't done more with him, considering he is back home in the, you know, not in a position of power, but in the corridors of power. You know, they could do mm-hmm. something with that, but they just haven't. He's just been like, I am sad and I'm back home and here I am in this grocery store checking up on the onions, and it's like, what? And meanwhile, you know, the world is at stake over in the other storyline, and like, he's literally checking up on groceries in season 5. Like, what the like, he must really have got along with the show creators to be able to get a paycheck to be written into the story that way. That's
or
kind of
he's
amazing.
Gone through the counterpart portal and the other Oleg is busy fucking up Saul Berenson's shit with fake Facebook ads, which is what's happening. Spoiler, no one cares.
New Tommy Westfall universe were created here in all the spy shows. Yeah. You know, there's certain shows that sort of you really get into and you almost sort of become like, you know, a fan of, you know what I mean? And by fan of, I mean like crazy Game of Thrones people and stuff like that. And like, this is the kind of show that has the DNA for that, but never really closes the deal. Like, it's always good in the moment. I never feel like I want to rewatch this show and go back, but I always think it's well made when I watch it and interesting, but it just mm-hmm. doesn't have that stickiness that some other shows of this type have.
If I may.
Yes.
I think it's that unlike Homeland, it doesn't have that bonkersosity. Like,
yeah.
For sure, people get killed in very, and then subsequently butchered in even more gross ways. Like, it's not that they won't kill someone.
And subsequently dug up sometimes.
But I don't think, it never feels like it's reaching past what is reasonable for these characters to do.
It feels sort of like a 70s movie. Aesthetically, but sort of the pacing.
But that too, in a way.
And the stakes. Yeah, it's sort of like one of those, you know, Days of Some Bird, you know, film or
Days of Some Bird
as a TV series
or Checking Up on the Onions.
Yeah.
That movie from the 70s.
Yeah. Wasn't it a UPN show, Checking Up on the Onions?
There's something so I just find it so there's something so magical about the way that they can wring interest out of so little drama. I guess it's just the fact that the stakes are so high that they don't ever need to raise anyone's pulse watching it. Right. And they can hold any action for maybe every fourth episode. Mm-hmm. Because really there's not that much. There's a lot of talking in kitchens. And a lot of talking in Paige's bedroom. And it's, but somehow I'm incredibly compelled and I'm just not exactly sure why. And I think that's what makes me look forward to watching it.
Oh, I got three words for you. FBI mail bot.
Yeah, I love it.
Came for the spies, stayed for the mail bot.
Stay for the bot. But I was confused because I watched the show in a bubble. No, I was watching it at a different time than everyone. So I could never discuss. Was it discussed a lot that Pastor Tim looked a lot like Phil in one of his costumes?
Like Phil. Oh, Philip. No, I don't really. I don't really see it. No, that's funny.
I thought he and the wheat guy in Topeka.
That I would agree with. Other than Topeka wheat guy had a beard. But yes, other than that, those two look alike for sure.
Topeka wheat guy.
Topeka wheat guy. That's the Better Call Saul spinoff. Topeka wheat guy.
Let's talk about Philip because his arc seems like it's going to be really interesting this season. He's quit and we get to see him in the premiere tragically take his staff out line dancing. As I wrote in my epic old school recap on previously.tv, the joy that he takes in this super normie activity is so heartbreaking. Like the pathos that they wring out of him boot scooting with all of the staff from the travel agency, it broke my fucking heart. Like I walked through the room when Dave was watching the episode for the first time and I was like, I put my hand on my heart because like it hurt me. And so the idea that he's like, he's been so happy in his, you know, normal American life. And then, you know, here comes Oleg to tell him he has to come back in and spy on his wife is, you know, that's interesting to me. But then slight spoiler for the next two episodes, we also start to see that the travel agency is not doing so well. And so in addition to like his sort of tragic storyline with having to spy on his wife that, you know, he actually happened to come to love over time, he's also having a tragic American story, which is his business is failing and he's doesn't know what to do. And, you know, so that's compelling to me. Dave, you watched those two episodes. What did you think of Philip in them?
Yeah, he's just sort of on the wrong side of economic history and all of this, like USSR spy. That's not going to turn out well for him.
Yeah, true.
Pre-internet travel agent. You know, the sun is setting on that industry.
Yeah.
His wife is a career woman and he's going to be out of a job. That's going to be tough for him. And now he's going to have to actually spy on her. A daughter that's now in the game who's on the losing side of history. Like, who would have thought that the bright spot in this family is Henry winning his hockey game or whatever the hell that was.
Fucking him.
Like, that is the only thing this family's got going for him is that Henry doesn't absolutely suck at collegiate hockey. That is what Philip has to look forward to. So it's going to be a tough road.
Also, Stan isn't bogarting his beers every night anymore.
Either. That's true. Yeah.
He's got that girlfriend. Which, what's her deal? We still don't know.
Don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's going to be another Misha where it's just like a red herring character and then nothing goes anywhere with her either.
I certainly hope not. I think, you know, I always wondered in watching the show, if they were actual travel agents. It was never very clear to me. And I thought I watched it pretty close, but now that they're not doing well, I guess the answer is no, they weren't really travel agents.
Well, I think they were. I think it was just
not that skillful.
No, no.
They're sending people to the wrong countries.
Yeah. Yeah. Poor Stavos. That's the only guy who I think is the holdover, that older Greek guy that they finally get out on the floor to do his line dancing to.
Yeah.
So sad. Anyway. Well, it's still a good show. I'm glad that they're ending on their terms, but I'm also glad it's ending. Like, this is not a concept that you could spin out forever, The X-Files.
No. I was wondering, in watching the premiere of this season, I was wondering if you're wrong and Paige doesn't die.
Right.
You could do a 30 years later Paige series.
True.
That might be kind of interesting. 2000. 15 Americans.
Page in the spread of fake news.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
But that's what's happening on Homeland already, so maybe they wouldn't.
Yeah, facebook.com/fuckingpage. Sure. I would watch.
We'll have to pitch that. Last week, I made a photo composite that I put on Instagram and Twitter of side-by-side photos of Hope Hicks, recently quit White House communications director, and Kerry Russell, because they really look alike. They really, really look alike. And Emily Nussbaum retweeted it, and Margot Martindale tweeted back that she thought it was great, and I thought that was awesome. Woo-hoo. Because who would know better than Margot Martindale, who looks like Kerry Russell? We didn't even talk about her in our discussion of the Americans. I love her on the show. That's it.
Oh, yeah.
Hello. This is Gordon Lightfoot's official Duke of Extra Hot Greats. I am here today's for birthday greetings for Laura's. Every year, Ari spent good hard-earned monies, probably half Laura's, to buy birthday greetings on Extra Hot Greats. Now, one day, Extra Hot Greats might not be here. So what then, Ari's? What you get, Laura? So Gordon Lightfoot here with advice of some things that you should get Laura in years futures. 60-pound bag of Delicious's Natural Balance Kibbles. A floppy, furry, squeaky toy to put in mouth and shake terribly. How about chicken jerky treats that not let you down in the flavor departments? Don't forget, 5 minutes of head scratches followed by a firm pat on the bums. And I think maybe best gift of all is a cat with paws taped up, trapped in a yard, for Laura to chase around, eventually catch, and do what with she pleases. These are the things birthday dreams are made out of. So from Gordon Lightfoot's and everybody else at Extra Hot Greats, we wish you, Laura, a happy birthdays from Ari's. Happy birthdays!
It is time to go around the dial. Our first stop is the daddiest he's ever been, Tara.
Well, before we get into Alex Inc., just a quick update on Roseanne. Since the extremely successful premiere of the latest season of the show last week, season 10, which it's already been renewed for, I believe, two more seasons, and complimented by the president. But a lot of people on Twitter are unearthing more of her old tweets from the last few years, and I now no longer think it's ethical to watch the show for me personally. You all should do whatever you want. But she literally, in addition to believing in Pizzagate, also believes in that there are literal lizard people running the government. She says Nancy Pelosi is one. You can tell if you look in her eyes. She's also spreading this even crazier than Pizzagate conspiracy theory revolving around QAnon. QAnon, if you want to Google it. I don't necessarily recommend it because it's fucking bananas. But, you know, at some point, you have to decide whether this is just straight right-wing trolling or if she is maybe suffering some kind of issue mentally or neurologically. Either way, for me personally, it no longer feels responsible to support her career, so I'm not going to, but good luck with the show. Alex Inc. is also a sitcom on ABC.
Hang on. Steve, I have a question for you regarding this.
Yeah. No, I can't support watching Alex Inc. either.
Creator,
I don't think it's ethical. Did I get that right?
Creator and showrunner of You're the Worst. How many calls from President Donald Trump have you received so far?
It's so depressing, but none. I don't know what I'm doing wrong.
Oh no!
Have any of the junior Trumps called you?
Eric.
We will accept Eric.
Alex Inc.
Maybe. Yeah, Alex Inc. Oh God, this is the new Zach Braff vehicle, which, as I also tweeted recently, white privilege is both Josh Radnor and Zach Braff having new network sitcoms in the year 2018. But anyway, this one is based on, I guess, Alex Bloomberg, the This American Life guy, started Gimlet Media, and this is like the adaptation of how he did it as a TV show. But wow, it's so
wow, that
bad.
Just got whiter than even I expected.
Exactly.
Wow.
I mean, the woman who plays his wife, and I don't know anything about Alex Bloomberg's real life. He's not called that on the show. It's Alex something else. But his wife is played by Vicky from The Good Place. So, you know, that's one not white person. Everyone else is white, of course. The idea is that he's working on this cheerful podcast or radio show or something, and feels creatively stifled. So he wants to go off on his own, and he's pitching Chris Sacca, another person in the ABC family, on like funding this startup. And the whole thing about the premiere is that his kids are already like, you know, I don't care. You know, you got to get pictures in, their audio is boring. And so to convince them, he's trying to like pitch them this big, you know, true crime story that he wants to do, and and trying to show them how, you know, audio can be just as suspenseful as TV, but he's doing it on a TV show. Like the whole premise is so misbegotten. If what you're trying to say is like audio is new and now and great, why are we watching a TV show about it? Who fucking cares? But it also turns on what apparently happened with the real startup, which was the first show that they did was a show about starting this network. Like, I gather it was successful. I certainly have never listened to it. I don't know who would give a fuck. And also the main conflict in the premiere of this show is that he tells his wife that he's definitely, absolutely not going to break into their 401k in order to fund this new venture that he's doing. No. And then guess what? He does, you guys. Which I don't think you can do without getting her signature on some papers to do it. But also, like, that's a horribly shitty thing to do, and she should not support him. She should divorce him.
Chekhov's nest egg.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, you forgot about the advertising for it, which made me laugh out loud, because it's ABC, Alex Inc., Zach Braff is back, and he's daddier than ever.
No.
Who is this? When was Zach?
First of all, yuck. Second of all, when was Zach Braff ever daddy-y? Answer, never.
He was Braffy. That's always been the problem.
Yeah.
And it's why I will not consent to be in the same room as this television program.
Yeah, wow. I only watched it like for research purposes. It's not like I thought it was going to be good, and it wasn't. But wow, it was so much worse than I even thought it would be.
And what about Rise? What about the other half of your tweet?
Oh, well, that was our lead topic a couple of weeks ago. We talked about it with Adam Grossworth. I like the show despite Josh Radnor. It's not perfect. It has a lot of problems, but it has that sort of that parenthood-y DNA that makes it very appealing and watchable.
So. It's terrible.
I'm still watching it. Dave's
I watched him in the same night as Alex Inc., based on your tweet, and woof.
Ooh.
Yeah, well, you know, it's not for everybody. Yeah. It's not for Dave. It's for me and Adam Grossworth and maybe three other people in this country, and that's it. For my plug, Bride and Doom is about to wrap up. This is the podcast I do on Married at First Sight with Brian Rubenstein. You can find it on our network, and some shit that they've been teasing since the premiere is about to go down. In the episode that will be dropping on April 10th, just warning you now, it's going to get lit. So if you haven't been listening, catch up. I'm really excited.
I'm looking forward to this. Stee, you're up.
Oh, God.
Yeah, there's a guy named Alan Ball who make shows on HBO like 6 Feet Under, and which I quite liked. And True Blood, which it was not for me, but I'm not a high camp person. So I don't, the Ryan Murphys of the world don't hit me too much, but now he's back with a show. It's called Here and Now. I think it's called Here and Now. It might be called This Is Us. I don't, or You or Them, or
Now and Again.
Later.
Yeah.
Sure. No thanks.
Then and Now, the chewy candy that becomes gum. The HBO series, sure, I got it.
Yeah, but I'll tell you, Sarah, I would, no thanks would have been my reaction, and yet watching it, it fills, and I have to explain this, it fills a spot in my heart that Studio 60 did, which is that it makes me feel so many things that I have to watch every week, because I get to feel. I don't feel the things they're trying to make me feel.
Okay.
I feel other things very strongly.
Superiority, I assume, is one of those things.
No,
rage.
Rage. Face planting was an emotion. glee. There's a lot of glee. There's a lot of confusion. It's a show about a Berkeley couple played by Holly Hunter and Tim Robbins on the wrong side of the acting that they normally do, and they live in Portland because of course they do, and they have four adult children, well, three adult children, all from third world countries. One Colombia, one, oh gosh, I'm going to get these wrong. One's from somewhere in Africa.
Liberia, I think.
Liberia and Vietnam. And they're now adult. They're now equally as annoying and obnoxious and bubbly as the parents. and then they have Kevin Bacon's daughter as their one biological child who's in high school. There's also a psychologist who is played by someone who used to be on 6 Feet Under. This guy who's a Muslim, but he hates the religion. He hates Islam. But then he has a trans kid who does love Islam. There is everything. He threw everything into the show.
You haven't even mentioned the numbers.
Oh, and then there's like the number 23, if you like that Jim Carrey horror movie.
Yep.
But this is the number 1111.
Yep.
It's the mysticism of 1111. One of the sons is gay, obviously, so there's a lot of gay sex, until he finds out that his barista boyfriend is, and I quote, "Holy shit, dude, you're homeless." And that's how they break up.
Wow.
There's also mental illness. There's also mysticism. There's also the most boring video game in the world that the Colombian child has created, that we get to see a lot of the gameplay, which is just a room where a bunch of butterflies are. And it's a quick fire challenge that where the challenge was to throw every single ingredient in your refrigerator and try to make something that tastes good. It don't taste good, but it's fun to put in your mouth.
Sounds like he might be making the same game they were making on Halt and Catch Fire in the last season.
Oh, yeah.
Wasn't that butterflies dancing around and stuff, too?
Yeah, we talked
about this on the premiere, and I really enjoyed reliving it through your eyes. And I made that same Jim Carrey thing. It was like, really, it was Portlandia, plus NPR, plus Jim Carrey whispering your ear about numbers as a TV show. It's like fantastic.
It's pretty. Anytime you see four things lined up next to each other, that qualifies as 1111.
Oh my god. I'm so glad you're still watching it. That's fantastic.
I'll never stop. I still watch Studio 60, the old DVDs.
Yeah. Oh my god.
Just so I can feel.
Now, Steve, you have a lot of things going on. Would you like to plug some or all of them? When can the public see your new child? When's the showing?
Her unveiling is fall 2019 on TBS.
Okay, awesome.
You're the Worst is a show I do, and it's on iTunes and Hulu and stuff. And the new season will be coming out, I don't know, September maybe, on FXX.
That sounds right.
All. Yeah.
Sweet.
Sounds great. Good.
Who would have thought that the guy who recapped Chains of Love would be talking to us years later? Showrunner, creator of his own show on TV. What a world.
Well, yes, I did do Chains of Love, but I also did the, what's her name? The one who's married to Nick Lachey. Why can't I
Nick
remember?
Jessica Simpson.
Yeah, and I took a meeting with Jessica Simpson recently just for fun. Just to see if she'd yell at me for the news story that broke out of my recap where I put forth the hypothesis over the entire recap that she couldn't read.
Uh-huh.
And she was forced to defend it in the press.
Mm-hmm. That happened to somebody else recently too, right? The girl
Leah
from
Michelle.
Glee. Yeah, right.
Leah Michelle.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. Somebody put a YouTube video out. Yeah.
But Jessica just wanted to pitch me a TV show. She didn't know about it.
So. Did you serve Chicken of the Sea? Please say yes.
What was the other show you did that was like the hot tub petri dish of sexual disease?
Temptation Island.
Yeah. Yes, Temptation
I
Island. I couldn't figure
I
out the name.
That.
My brain kept on going to Bachelor in Paradise. I knew it was something to
well,
do with.
Yeah. Speaking of petri dishes, I also did the Brittany and Kevin show.
That's right.
Oh God.
Wow. We gave you a lot of shit. Holy cow.
And the Osbournes
I,
too,
I apologize on behalf of the editorial team, Tara and Sarah.
Oh, I was gonna blow this podcast as revenge, but now that you've apologized, I'll just do it right there.
Dirty Budding.
I guess it's time on Around the Dial to talk about a show that I actually enjoyed, which is the two-part documentary on HBO, The Zen Diaries of Gary Shandling. I've actually only watched the first part so far. I don't know if you guys have watched it.
Nope.
You
nope.
should. It's good. I have learned a lot about Shandling, whose career I sort of was like, you know, I was aware of him, obviously, but wasn't like that plugged into what he was doing, and found him kind of like, he just made me uncomfortable. But it's very informative and really smart about just about him, what made him unique. It's also smart about just writers and comedians in general, the way that they/we think about themselves and about their work and about the ability to separate it and whether that's even possible. This is a Judd Apatow joint. He can Apatire me out sometimes, but he's relatively chill here. I definitely could have done without the anecdote from Dave Coulier about walking in on Shandling doing it, but I'm still in for part two. This is a, you know, commitment at 4 hours ish, but I think that it's worth it. And my plug back to bad shows, in quote honor of the passing of Stephen Bochco. And speaking of Adam Grossworth, I would like to point everyone to, my series with Adam Grossworth on previously.tv, in which we watched all of Cop Rock and tried to figure out what the crispy fuck was going on with that show. We never figured it out, spoiler, but we had a pretty good time doing it. And Adam's trenchant analysis of what was going wrong from the musical theater side was really fun to learn from and still fun to read. There will be a link in the show notes. That's yep. right. Cop Rock. Enjoy.
Season 4 of the original Bridge from Denmark/Sweden is on Hulu now. So this is like one of my favorite shows, and it's just one of those bonkers crime shows that have come out of Scandinavia in the past decade or so, along with, you know, the original Killing and shows of that ilk. This is the one that every story, every season, the crime revolves somehow is related to the bridge that separates the two countries that goes over the strait that's between the two. And it involves, an autistic police officer from Sweden and somebody on the Denmark side, and they have to solve crimes together. And it's very weird, and you know, it has that typical Scandinavian red herring loop structure that they do for all their shows that I, for some reason, can't get enough of. I love it, even though I know the pattern now. Like, I still buy into it. There's something about the presentation of it that's still very compelling very enjoyable. I will say this last season, which is the last season, not quite as crazy as they have been. Certainly the murders are not as theatrical and showy.
It starts with a woman getting buried up to her shoulders and stoned to death. So YMMV on that one.
Okay, but compare that to what is relative, but compare that to other seasons where the series begins with somebody who is placed exactly on the border between the two countries, cut in two on the bridge. Yes. Another season with all the toy maker kind of sets and stuff that guy did. That was crazy. Right. A lot of the deaths that they set up before that, they were very Rube Goldbergian. And this season, you had a lady that was stoned to death, but that was like, that's normal compared to everything else that happened on this show.
This sounds like this sounds like the snowman.
It's unrepentant in its sort of grisliness in that way. The fact that the main detective is autistic, she sort of just takes it all in stride, which makes it even, you know, kind of swims in your head even more because of that. But anyways, I really love this series, and they did two weird things in this season. One was they had sort of this retcon episode about halfway through where they jump back in time, which I thought was kind of a cheap way to unfurl the mystery of the season.
About this character who they're like, it comes to a point where they're like, it's all about X, and it's someone that we have heard zero about this point. And then we get his whole backstory from 4 years ago.
Yeah. And it's like, well, that was kind of lazy. Like, you know, there's red herrings and then there's like, you know, red whales.
The herring you didn't know existed.
Yeah. But it was interesting. One of the interesting things is that, you know, they show this in Denmark and Sweden. Usually then it goes to BBC first, because they sort of popularized the show outside of Scandinavia. And then since the age of streaming TV, then it goes to, you know, Hulu or whoever has it, you know, at the moment. And there's this one character in this season who's in the police station, who's a bigot and a dick. And he keeps on referring to this one Iranian refugee as that Iranian homo, when obviously he was saying fag in the original thing, but nobody along that line, I don't know if it was BBC or whether it's Hulu, I guess it's probably Hulu, changed the subtitles each time to homo, which really...
I mean, I don't know that. That was just speculation that he was saying something that was offending people every time. Like, homo is offensive also, but I felt like he was saying something harsher.
Yeah, it was definitely supposed to be sharper than that. So it's sort of interesting that sort of at some point, you know, they sort of softened that edge in the subtitles. So anyways, but it's a good show. I enjoyed it. I'm sad it's gone, but we'll have 4 seasons to live forever in our hearts. The other two shows.
It's only 8 episodes. We watched them all in one extremely lazy day. So.
Yeah.
Where are all 4 of them on?
I think they're all on Hulu now. Yeah.
I believe that is right. Yes.
The other, I will follow up on 2 other shows. One is I'm really enjoying Unreal for some reason still. I'm enjoying everything that's going on there. It's not my typical...
Wait, really?
Yeah,
Just would never put you and that show together.
Oh, I know.
That's have either, but we watched it for the podcast and you got really into it.
I did get really into it. It's super campy, but it's also like very sort of like, well, you might not find it interesting because you live that, you know, like making a TV show, but like the actual mechanics of making this terrible TV show concept work are kind of interesting to itself. But I kind of love it. And there's like some characters that are like just completely unredeemable. And I kind of love that in a TV show when they're just like chaotic evil and they know it, you know, and it's just like, that's the way they are.
I'll also say I've been reading Amy Kaufman's book, Bachelor Nation, which is the, you know, obviously the tell all about how the show is actually made. And it makes it watching Unreal a completely different experience where you could see, wow, they really did not even like barely fictionalize the real people from The Bachelor for this show. Anyway.
Yeah.
Wow.
So that's fun. And then the other show that I started watching is Atlanta, and been watching a couple more of that here and there, going back to season 1 and catching up and, not telling anybody who's watched the show anything they don't know, but that's a fucking good show, guys.
It's really good. And Counterpart, we should also say we watched the whole season of that, and that was also very satisfying.
You put it up against The Americans, and you think The Americans has style and mood, but then like Counterpart sort of like comes in and sort of says, I got this, guys. And it's like really feels like they've made like a 10-hour movie. It's great. It's like The Americans, if everybody in The Americans had a... other dimension double that sometimes came to visit and talk to their mom and dad. That's the show. It is time for the canon. Presenting this week is Steve. Take it away, Steve.
Hey, everybody. So, so my episode that I put, I have one in the canon already that I'm from 2011, I realized, or 2012. Speaking of Gary Shandling, it was a Larry Sanders episode so far. The only one to be in there. Hank's sex tape, which maybe is a little creepy now. But so this is Archer episode, season one, episode seven, called Skytanic. Now, you know, I'm not an animation guy in general. I'm not a comics guy. Drawings never really did it for me the way humans do. And, you know, even at the beginning when I started watching Archer, because it was on FX and I like what they do even before I had a show on there. I had a hard time with the animation style, but the writing and performances and the sheer narcissistic, neurotic, depraved looniness of the show got to me really early. But it did take a handful of episodes for me to really solidify in my heart the way it has. And that episode that did that was the seventh episode, Skytanic. Archer was, as a character, was really fully baked from the beginning, I thought. But here we really learn the true depth of sexual depravity of Cheryl and the wimpiness and inferiority of Cyril, Pam's overall disgustingness, the strength and man hands of Lana, and the lengths to which Mallory will go to one-up her rival. And also Gillette in this episode gets a real showcase in the extended bomb defusal scene. So Archer quickly became one of my favorite shows. Obviously, the acting is incredible. H. John Benjamin, Judy Greer, Chris Parnell, Aisha Tyler, Jessica Walter are all just amazing. But the writing, mostly Adam Reed writes every episode, is just so goddamn funny and tight and fast. The in-jokes are so specific. Like, one of the funniest things to me, I don't know why, but how delighted Archer gets in a different episode where he meets Cheryl's family pet ocelot. He's never seen an ocelot. He's particularly excited how its ears are tufted. but, you know, it's a spy show, but it's also an office comedy. Also the characters are hot. To describe the plot, so Skytanic, there's a bomb threat on a ludicrously upscale rigid airship / blimp. It's maiden voyage to London. The ship's called the Excelsior. And it's gonna, the episode's gonna involve all the characters either by Mallory assigning them to investigate the bomb threat or them stowing away like Cyril does because Archer and Lana have to share a tiny stateroom, or Pam and Cheryl because Cheryl wants to sexually degrade herself further with Cyril. So the main spy plot involves Lana trying to figure out who may have planted the potential bomb and finding said bomb, and Archer just being casually racist and losing Lana in a gambling debt a la Indecent Proposal. So in the first clip here, they have watched, as the episode begins, a perfect old-timey ad reel for the Excelsior.
All aboard Excelsior!
God, who'd want to put a bomb on that?
Well, that's what we're hoping ISIS can find out.
No, why bother? Some broad gets on there with a staticky sweater and boom, it's...
Oh, the humanity!
No, that's...
Sterling, were you watching some other blimp commercial just now?
Technically, it's a rigid airship.
Filled with helium.
Which is non-flammable.
Which I...
Dumbass.
I thought our promotional video covered that fairly well.
And how? Sterling, it's totally safe.
Well, except for the bomb threat.
No, not to worry, dear. ISIS won't let terrorists blow up your lovely blimp.
Rigid airship.
My top two agents will be on board.
Nope.
And I will oversee the operation personally from what I assume will be first-class accommodations.
Ooh, actually, we are fully booked.
Well, if you think, I don't know, this Trudy Beekman person can thwart a major terror plot.
I suppose we could bump Mrs. Beekman.
Bump me? I'm not going.
If these two can share a cabin.
Nope! Not going to let the terrorists win. We'll pose as husband and wife.
Nope! Cyril would totally freak. Mallory, come on, let me stay with you and we'll do the whole Oprah Gale thing.
Nope! I need a stateroom to myself in case I have a gentleman caller.
Mother, please.
Please, do not make me do this.
But Lana... Think of the innocent lives you'll be saving. And also the fact that this is a direct order.
At least tell me it's separate beds. Ugh.
Lana. 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 Lana!
What? Danger zone.
So here, obviously, we get, as we heard, we get the noobs, we get Lana, 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 we get Danger Zone, all the hits that we didn't know were hits yet. And so the subplot, first, I guess I should say, it obviously strikes the ear Yes, they were still called ISIS back here. But we will just let that go. So the subplot then involves Cyril's jealousy of Lana, having to bunk up with Archer, leading to them in the episode taking a break, a la Rachel and Ross, and Cheryl's continuing sexual blackmail of Cyril while Pam watches. And that leads us to the second clip.
Pick one. Either A, I tell Lana what happened on that scratchy green office rug, or two, you get inside me.
Or C, maybe I just jam this mop into the engine and kill all of us.
I don't think that's how blimps work.
Darn! Right, we just sort of float around. Stupid, naturally safe helium.
But I am liking the jamming imagery. And the killing.
And are you just gonna sit there?
Yeah, until she tags me in.
What?
I'm kidding! My back's all messed up. So you're ruining Cyril's life because in your dream, the impossible dream world, it'll make Mr. Archer jealous?
Oh, Pamela, you read me like a poem.
Yeah? What's the poem gonna be about when Cyril snaps and murders you?
I don't know. World's gushiest orgasm?
So those three words, world's gushiest orgasm, I remember watching it back in, I guess, 2010, made my jaw drop, and I've written on some very filthy shows. Archer is my favorite thing Judy Greer has ever done by a mile. In that clip, though we didn't have the visual, Cheryl is also lying naked with a broken mop. The mop is now broken, which somehow makes the whole thing even filthier, even though it is unspoken. Cheryl also loves being choked during sex and or the idea of being literally killed. And so now the budding sex addict and very endowed Cyril, who once tried to get ISIS insurance to cover a penis ensmallment operation, figures now that he's blown it with Lana, he might as well choke bang Cheryl once again. While in this third clip, Pam is revealed to be sitting on the toilet.
Well, whose fault is that? Prancing around in your Fiocchi knockoffs, blathering about your vulva?
Hey, first of all,
I'm just saying, you're driving Cyril straight toward another woman.
Cyril with another woman? Mallory, seriously, look at me.
Look at me! Look at and choke me!
Oh my God! Oh, what am I doing? God,
you're ruining your life, you idiot! And making it hard to drop a deuce.
And there we also get one of the key things about Archer that I love so much is the transitions from scene to scene. They'll end with one line that'll then continue in the next scene. The answer to that line, but in a totally different scene. It's very clever. Here in the fourth clip, Archer finds a very distressed Cyril running around looking for Lana wearing Archer's mother's robe.
Archer!
Cyril, what are you...
Archer, I need your help. I think I'm losing it here, man.
What gave it away? My mother's robe? Why are you wearing my mother's robe?
I can explain this.
I don't think I want you
to. It all started when you and Lana...
Cyril, you should tell her this.
I tried, but you were naked, and it was all vulva this and vulva
that.
Yeah,
and as you stand here, dick and or balls caressed by my mother's robe, Lana is waiting for you.
Really? Where?
The Led Zeppelin suite.
There's a Von Zeppelin suite.
Which I'm sure is what I meant, so go!
Thanks, Archer! You're the best!
I know.
So here in our fifth clip, in a lovely reveal, we learn that the entire assignment, the bomb threat that kicked off this episode in the first place, is false. Mallory made the bomb threat because Excelsior is fully booked for its maiden voyage, but Mallory couldn't stand to let her rival Trudy Beekman be on the ship and not her. And we also learned that getting bumped for Mallory caused Trudy to literally vomit with anger. Here's the fifth clip.
Well, then, what is it?
Okay, so Cyril got in over
Jesus
his head.
God, did he kill her?
No. He ran from her to go confess to Lana. But so then this one starts freaking out, and long story short, I kind of had to drown her in the tub.
So you killed her?
Apparently not. So, good news.
Shut up, Pam. And did Cyril run by here crying in a woman's bathrobe?
Well, it wouldn't surprise me. You're driving him stark raving mad.
What'd I do?
What you do Running around all up and down this stupid blimp.
Against the rules?
Half-naked, tits bouncing around like you're at a rodeo, then going back to some billionaire's suite?
I was trying to stop a bomb plot.
Oh, my God! There is no bomb!
More good news.
And just how do you know that?
Oh, because I made the bomb threat. Trudy Beekman booked the very last ticket on this flight, so it was all... Meh, meh, meh. I'm Trudy Beekman. I'm on the co-op board, and I'm going on a blip. Meh! So, yes, I made a phony bomb threat.
Good for you.
And yet you lecture me. Lovely.
Hello?
So, what would you say if I told you that your mother made a phony bomb threat...
Just to get a free ride on a blimp?
I'd say that's fairly classic her.
Oh, shut up.
And then I'd just sort of laugh at the, whatchamacallit. Irony.
Something about Jessica Walter's, imitation of Trudy Beekman there that cracks me up.
I'm going on a blimp.
But then in a twist of events, there is actually a bomb, which was planted by the beleaguered captain who'd originally hired ISIS. His name is Lammers, because the ship undersold it. And he shorted the company's stock. And once the bomb goes off and the blimp crashes, the company will fold. He will make millions. Here's the next tiny little clip.
Wow. Now I feel like an asshole.
Your words.
But could you be a lamb and disarm it anyway?
Yeah, probably.
What?
Okay, I got the turtleneck and my wire cutters. Now, where are we?
We're at... You just shot the guy who could disarm the bomb, jackass!
What? I didn't shoot him!
Well, then who...
You think I'd bring a gun on this fire trap?
Well, then who did it?
I did!
Captain Lammers!
Nice read, Velma.
So, something that Archer does so well is mine comedy out of the ludicrous attention to detail that the script pays. Mm-hmm. In the middle of a life or death spy operation, there's this obsession with minutiae constantly that tickles me. And this is a perfect example of that. The whole episode, Archer annoys everyone, including Lammers, with his inability to understand the difference between hydrogen, which is what made the Hindenburg so deadly, and helium, which is what the Excelsior is fueled with. So here in this next clip, we get the payoff of that.
See, it's that kind of selfish shit.
Lana, no! You'll kill us all!
Oh, for the last time, you idiot! It's not hydrogen! It's helium!
And what about that are you still not getting exactly?
Well, obviously the core concept, Lana. Sorry I didn't go to space camp.
How about bomb defusal camp?
No, actually, lacrosse camp, if that helps. I mean, a lot of those skills are universal.
Shut up!
So the showcase of the episode is an incredibly long bomb defusal scene with Lon and Archer calling Ray Gillette, ISIS's analyst and bomb specialist, whose father once made him take a bite out of a bear heart he killed on a hunting trip, and who was once married to a lesbian he met at a Pray the Gay Away camp. Here's the next clip.
You ready?
Roger!
First letter is B.
Bravo.
Thanks. Second letter is
B. M as in Mike or N as...
As in Nancy. God, you of all
what?
People.
What?
Archer?
Me of all people, what?
Nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Ray, hon?
Okay,
no,
so...
You can say okay.
Oh, my God.
Ray, can I shoot him?
In about 5 seconds, honey.
Lana, be careful. Jesus, the helium!
Right after he cuts the solid green wire.
The green color is...
Solid or...
Roger!
Oh, Roger, cutting the green wire.
Archer!
Jesus, God, what?
That's how annoying you are.
Your mom's annoying.
Oh,
how about that?
Let's go there.
Let's go here, where Archer, shut up and cut the goddamn wire already.
You shut up and I'm doing it. God. What?
Oh my God, Ray.
What's going on?
The timer sped up.
Did you cut the green one?
Yes, Roger.
Steven, whoever.
Ray?
What were the last two letters?
B.
Ray?
As in butthole.
What do we do here?
And M. As in Mancy.
What?
M as in what?
Mancy. What'd you think I said?
Nancy!
Oh.
You idiot!
Yeah, I could see how, then I was like you of all...
Exact same
Ray?
Spot!
Ray, tell me what to do!
Ooh. Do y'all have parachutes?
No!
Well, that would be, you know, problem solved.
Ray!
I mentioned those character details in describing Gillette because that's something that's so great about Archer. As time goes on, detail upon ludicrous detail piles up to eventually to reveal and really deepen character very much the way 30 Rock or any of Mike Schur's comedies do. There are lots of strong episodes of Archer, but for me, Skytanic has everything in a contained story where everyone is together. And also, it doesn't rely too much on guest casting, which I find in the show is obviously sometimes tricky and less satisfying than just hanging with our core crew. Archer's gone on to try more experimental seasons of late with one-story seasons or seasons even named something else like Archer Vice or Archer Dreamland, which wreaked havoc on my DVR and actually was a big problem for FX. And while I always obviously support shows stretching and trying new things as they go on, Skytanic remains one of the best examples of what Archer does so well, the best dialogue writing in TV comedy in my mind. Our main characters acting selfishly and totally within character, a fun spy plot in a cool location, inside jokes, and not too much guest cast, and of course, Lana shooting Archer.
You said it. This is all of Archer in a nutshell. This is, I feel like, the first great episode of season one. Also, we were primed to like Archer because we were huge fans of Frisky Dingo and like whatever Adam Reed did next. We were obviously like 100% in. And the first few episodes, you know, they're still good, but this really is, as you say, a breakout in so many ways. At this point, I feel like they have established the Trudy Beekman animosity before, and that she would go to this extent to get back at her rival is, you know, hilarious. And then, you know, the twist that there actually is a bomb for real is an additional great story note. I mean, all of it is great. There's the Ray scene is spectacular. And I do feel like in subsequent seasons, they have leaned too hard on him and Krieger as well. That they sort of overuse those characters more than they should have. Also a problem in Frisky Dingo with the
Mr. Ford
labor. Yes. Mr. Ford and also the guy, Cody's friend.
Wendell,
yeah. But we're not here to talk about Frisky Dingo, which is great. This is it's delightful to watch. So much great dialogue. It looks great. The underwear is hilarious. Fulvous, smooth as a veal cutler. Like, there's just so many memorable moments, and starting with Danger Zone to close out the cold open. Like, it's just a roller coaster from there. It, like, never stops being great. So this was an excellent presentation of an excellent episode.
Was that the first Danger Zone?
Oh, I don't know. I doubt it. But
no, it wasn't.
Okay.
Yeah, this was fantastic to revisit. I've sort of fallen off with Archer in the last few seasons because of the like overuse of formerly judiciously used characters. I didn't think the Vice thing was as funny as they thought it was and went on too long. And then I kind of like peaced out after that. But it was really nice to come back to it. Like making fun of not just rigid airships, but like the rigid airship community's defensiveness about rigid airships. Like, I was in the bag for it already, but then just the bomb defusal scene is perfect use of Ray, who before they were overusing him was my favorite character. Mm-hmm. And also very realistic, I feel, as to what actual people would be like trying to defuse a bomb and use the, like, whatever army alphabet that they never learned. Like, B as in butthole would absolutely be what Sarah would be screaming over comms. And the comparison of her pubes to a Commodore's tribute band. Like, there are a couple of little throwaway lines that I like had to pause it first to laugh and then to make sure I heard them right. Like the little aside of Archer like leaving a room, he's like, blimps are terrible. They kind of are. They're really stupid. And yet they gave us this brilliant episode, which it's really an impressive density of shit going on. And Archer at its best, that they, and like there were a couple of season two episodes that were like this too, and I hope those are put up for canon consideration too, because it just, like, there's like four things happening at once and they're all hilarious, and but it's still like actually well plotted. It's just crazy dense.
Brooklyn Nine-Nine is like that as well, where they could like totally shine on the cop story element of it just to get the jokes in, but they service both. And I think Archer does that too.
Yeah. And yeah, that's it for me. Thank you for having us rewatch this because, I mean, B isn't butthole. that's enough. Sometimes it's the little things. Yep. Dave.
Yeah, you know, I gave up on Archer a couple of seasons ago, too, when I guess it was at the start of the Dreamland. Yeah, we gave it two episodes, and I think I laughed once, and I was like, I'm not sure if it's not funny anymore, either, or if it's just like Archer became one of those comfort food shows where you're just like, I know all the beats now, I know what everybody says, and they were just sort of like repeating or leaning on that. I'm not quite sure what it was, but this episode sort of makes me want to go back and like start it up again and see if I still have the same reaction, because
yeah, same.
I thoroughly enjoyed going back to Archer, and it's been a couple of years since I've watched an episode, and holy shit, this was a good episode. And I just want to say for the record, me and Tara have been in the back of our minds for like, I swear we did Skytanic for the canon before.
But and we're like, I keep going lists. Back and forth though. I couldn't decide.
I was
if we
Googling like all the previously Extra Hot Great plus Skytanic stuff. And we must have talked about it outside of the canon or something, but just on the off chance that somehow this is a double canon, entry, screw you. It's still good. So it would have been like Mark One. It would have been a long time ago.
It's definitely not in the previously .TV era. And I think it was partly that when we used to watch it, when it was syndicated, like for a while, every time we turned it on, it would be this episode and we would always watch it again because it's great.
Yeah, right. Isti, you were saying how Archer is such a fully realized character from the get-go. And I think they actually, not to like beat Frisky Dingo to death, but like, I think he is a fully realized character because he is just a continuation of Xander Cruz from Frisky Dingo. He's like 70% Xander Cruz. He even looks almost exactly like Xander Cruz from Frisky Dingo. And they're very similar characters. So I think, you know, being able to sort of like draw that line from one series to another really helped them get out of the gate really fast. For me, for some reason, the one line that I think in this episode that encapsulates everything I love about Archer, its timing, it throwaway lines in the middle of all the mayhem and middle of all the action, and there's still time for a little something. And that's nice line reading, Velma.
Yeah,
it was just like
I was wondering if Aisha Tyler maybe recorded that before, and then Sean Benjamin heard that and added that. That's how I like to imagine it went down.
Yeah. Oh my god, that. I love that kind of stuff. It hits so many notes just right. And that was like, for me, for some reason, that was the one that just sort of like tickled me the most. So yeah, thank you very much, Steve, for bringing this. I kind of want to go back and start Archer from the beginning again as a rewatch. Shall we put this to a vote?
Yes.
Tara Ariano, what say you?
First, just for the record, season 9 of Archer starts April 25th, and that will be Archer Danger Island.
Right.
Not sure what that's about, but yes. Yes to this canon submission. It's excellent, and the episode is excellent. Yay.
Sarah D. Bundy.
Hooray for metaphors!
That's a yes for me.
And I'll say yes as well. That means that Archer Season 1, Episode 7, Skytanic, you are hereby inducted into the Extra Hot Great Canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
It is time for Winner and Loser of the Week. Tara has our winner.
Wendy Williams has landed Cynthia Nixon's first sit-down TV interview since Nixon announced her candidacy for governor of New York. By the time this episode drops, this may have already aired. It's happening on Wednesday, so I'm not sure. I mean, check your local listings because obviously the Wendy show is syndicated, but that'll be something. I hope that Wendy has prepped and done some research because she's kind of notorious for flying by the seat of her pants, so... I don't watch every day, but I will be eager to see how this summit went down because wow.
And loser of the week.
Yes. Order is restored. Sarah has our loser. It's John Crickfalusi putting the ew back in Crickfalusi. I assume I'm pronouncing that correctly.
I think that's right.
Yet another hashtag Bandman item. This time he's accused of, I think the headline said sexual impropriety, but basically he like groomed a 13-year-old. And then when she was 16, moved her in. And it was like an open secret in the.
And he was 40.
Yeah. Here was where I began to think that I might actually barf on my desk. A statement from Craig Faluzzi's attorney that attempts to justify his alleged actions says, quote, "The 1990s were a time of mental and emotional fragility for Mr. Craig Faluzzi." Quote. Since then, quote, "he has worked feverishly on his mental health issues," not the adverb you want, Brohim, "and has been successful in stabilizing his life over the last decade," unquote. Here's the thing. Fuck off.
You know who else was probably mentally fragile in the 90s? The 16-year-old that you were having sex with.
And I don't think that's all he's been doing feverishly.
Sarah!
Do you know what time it is?
Time to fire you.
I have heard stories about him for so long, because I have a friend that works in the animation industry that worked with him for a little while.
Yeah, this through, was an like, unsurprising mention.
Yeah, and, you know, I can't speak to any of it directly, but having heard a lot of stories over the years, it does not surprise me to hear this one. So, speaking about things that are surprising, you know what time it is? Guess what? Game time. You know what that lawyer should have said is that John Kay was suffering from space madness.
What that lawyer should have said is, call the police.
All right, this is the eighth game time of the season. Season scores are currently value guess with 4, Sarah with 3, Tara with 0. What a weird season this has been. Steve, if you win the game today, you will clinch the first ever value guess season victory.
I won't.
Okay, good to know.
That's the spirit.
Today we are playing... From yours truly, who earns nothing but the satisfaction of a job well done. Tara, can you please explain our steel meal situation?
Sarah has 2 steel meals. I and the valued guests have none.
Hot potatoes, pretty easy to play, so let's throw it to Picky to see who is going to go first.
We will start with valued guest.
All right, so you're going to get the first crack at our first topic, Stee. Are we ready to play hot potato?
Yeah, what's our order?
Stee, and then Sarah, and then Tara.
Okay. Hot potato, hot potato, hot potato.
Round 1, TV shows with one of the 15 most watched episodes of all time in the U.S.
Oh!
So there's 15 here. All right, so what TV shows had one of the 15 most watched episodes of all time in the U.S., Steve?
MASH.
Sarah.
Cheers.
Seinfeld.
Friends.
Ooh. ER.
Sarah's up.
Big Bang Theory.
Tara's out.
But
Steve gets
America.
The first point. But any other guesses?
Cosby Show.
Cosby Show's on there. Yep.
Hill Street Blues.
Nope. All the ones he missed. All in the Family. Dallas. Everybody Dallas, Loves Raymond. Family Ties.
What?
Frasier. And I don't know. I'm Frasier. The Fugitive. Home Improvement. Magnum P.I., Roots, and The Tonight Show.
Yeah, you never know with sitcoms, like, what thing they're going to throw up after the Super Bowl, and then that changes.
Hot potato, 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 hot potato.
Round 2, ABC original TGIF run shows. That is TV shows, primetime TV shows. Thursday nights, 1988-89 season to 1999-2000 season. That is the original TGIF run.
It's Friday, not Thursday.
Yeah, Friday. I meant the day after Thursday.
Got it.
Is what I meant. Archer style.
I know.
Okay. Let's see. Who got that? Steve. So, Sarah, you're first.
Boy Meets World.
Full House.
Family Matters.
Okay. Just the 10 of Us.
Oh,
oh my God.
Cool. Step by Step.
Home Improvement.
Rock.
Lots left. Pardon me?
Rock? I don't know.
Rock? R-O-C. Like R-O-C? Yeah. Rock?
Yes, Rock.
I think that was on Fox.
That was on Fox.
Yeah. All right, Tara, you got it. Any other guesses?
Dinosaurs?
Dinosaurs is on there, yep.
Nice.
Lots of
was Sister Kate? Sister Kate?
Sister Sister.
Oh, yeah, that's what I meant. That's what I meant. That one.
squeaking in, I believe, on a technicality is 2020. Lots of shows probably that came and went very quickly, such as Aliens in the Family, Baby Talk, Billy, Camp Wilder, Brother's Keeper, Clueless. There's one that you might have got to eventually.
Yeah, sure.
Hanging with Mr. Cooper, The Hughleys,
Making
the Band, guys, Making the Band.
Making the Band.
Oh, famous original.
Everybody's favorite self-testicle sitting guy.
Mr. Belvedere.
Wesley.
Muppets Tonight, Odd Men Out, On Her Own, Perfect Strangers, Sabrina the Teenage Witch,
Fuck.
Teen Angel, Two of a Kind, Where I Live, and You Wish.
Hot potato, 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 hot potato.
All right, this is a round that could possibly have no points. It is a very short round. There are only 5 possible answers to this hot potato.
Okay.
TV shows that have crossed over with a Law and Order show. No Law and Order to Law and Order crossover.
Oh, okay. Shows outside the franchise.
Yeah. So who got that point?
Me.
Okay. So it is to Steve.
Yep.
So TV shows outside of Law and Order that have crossed over with Law and Order.
Homicide.
Is this just Law and Order famous original or
any Law and Order?
Law and Order?
Good question.
Chicago PD.
30 Rock. No!
Keep in mind, characters appearing are not crossovers.
Oh, okay. Got it.
Yeah. Back to Steve.
I'm just going out on a limb. Profiler?
I think it was destined that Sarah would get this point. But Sarah, can you fill us in on the others? Do you have a guess?
Chicago Fire,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah. Two other ones.
Whoa.
Chicago Med?
No, not Chicago Med. another Dick Wolf show, Conviction.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
And In Plain Sight. In Plain Sight.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah.
Didn't know that.
All right. So that means everybody's got one point as we head into round
all tied up.
4. All right, in round 2 we did ABCs. Thank goodness it's Friday. Now we're going to do NBC must-see TV.
Oh,
1993 to 94 season to 2005-2006 season is the must-see TV era. We have a bunch of shows. Tara, you're first.
Friends.
To Steve.
Oh, Seinfeld.
ER.
The Single Guy.
Oh! You took mine!
Caroline in the City.
Still lots left.
Oh, I know there's tons.
Suddenly Susan?
Yeah. Fired Up.
Fired Up. My goodness.
Back to Stee.
Inside Schwartz.
Wow. Nice!
Just shoot me?
Oh! Mad about you.
Four Kings?
Oh my god.
Falk!
Holy shit. Falk. My admiration for that answer has completely emptied my mind of any television programs, but surely I can think of something.
Still some big shows on the board.
Yeah, I bet. Do we say Cheers? Cheers.
It ended in 93.
Oh, right. Fuck.
All right. Sarah's
wait, can you repeat the years?
Yeah, the first season is 93-94. The last season is 2005-2006.
Okay, it's to me, right?
Yes, it's to you.
Tis.
Wings.
Wings.
You look sad.
Oh, man.
Guys are
so
still
good.
Big shows left.
I know. I'm only thinking of obscure stuff. The Larroquette Show?
The Larroquette Show. Unfortunately, no. Not on the list.
It was on CBS. Stark Raving Mad?
Stark Raving Mad is on there. You betcha. All right, wow. Here's some others.
Which our friend Mark Lazanti worked on.
Mark Lazanti!
Called The Apprentice. Battery Park. Boston Common.
Yeah.
Existing at the same time as Friends, his little show called Coupling.
Mm-hmm.
Cursed. Remember Daddy-O?
Oh, yeah.
Frazier, and I ought to know. I'm Frazier.
Frazier!
Good Morning Miami.
Yeah.
Homicide, Life on the Street.
Fuck.
Ah,
sorry, Hope guys. And Gloria. Jesse. Joey. L.A. Law. L.A. Law. Leap of Faith.
Fuck.
Mad Men of the People. Squeaking in at the end, My Name is Earl. The Naked Truth. The Office.
Yeah.
Scrubs. Union Square. The one I always mix up with Suddenly Susan. Veronica's Closet.
Right.
And lastly, for shame, Tara, Will and Grace.
Oh.
Will and Grace. All right, round five coming up. There are only two rounds left, so if Tara clinches either of these rounds, it's over. Round five, actor names appearing in the opening credits of the following bar set sitcoms. Cheers. Archie Bunker's Place, and It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Okay.
And this is
starting
to Stee.
Stee, yep.
Glenn Howerton.
Ted Danson.
Carol O'Connor.
Shelley Long.
Ah. Ding, ding. There we go.
Rhea Perlman.
Rhea Perlman, that's going to get you a ding.
Charlie Day.
John Ratzenberger.
George Wendt.
Danny DeVito.
Yeah, Woody Harrelson.
Oh, now I got to think of this guy's name.
Yep.
Nicholas Colasanto.
Nice. Caitlin Olson.
Oh shit.
From every
Kirstie
show.
Alley. Kirstie Alley.
Well, shit.
We're getting down to it, but there's still some big names here.
Rob Reiner?
Sarah's
Rob
out.
McElhenney?
I'm sorry?
Rob McElhenney? I don't know how to pronounce his name.
Correct. Tisty. We have
Kelsey,
one, two,
Kelsey
three,
Grammer.
Four.
Yeah.
What was that?
He said Kelsey Grammer.
Frazier, Kelsey Grammer.
You ought to know.
Yay.
I'm out. I don't know who else. I'm out.
Oh, she's out. Tara, if you just thought about it, flipping from Kelsey Grammer, Bebe Neuwirth.
Really?
She was in the credits one season.
I did not know that.
Also flipping Carol O'Connor, Jean Stapleton.
Oh, okay.
And others from Archie Bunker's Place. I have no idea who they
well
are.
Well done, Steve.
All right. Steve's got two. Tara's got two. Sarah's got one. This is our last round. Mm. Round six coming up. All right, this is a big list, but it might be a short round. I'm not sure. It depends how much all you guys love Glee.
Good luck,
this
everybody.
This is Glee songs that charted in the top 40 on Billboard singles. Asterisk. This is the way I set it up. Songs that were released as medleys are listed separately. So if a single was a medley of two songs, that counts as two different songs in this list. Steve got that point, so it's two. Sarah. Top 40 Glee hits.
Fuck you. Space! You've got a friend.
You got a friend. And you're out.
Yay!
Tara.
Don't Stop Believin'.
Don't Stop Believin'.
Shit, that was my one.
There's approximately a billion more.
Yeah, I feel like my wife worked on the Glee tour, and I had to go see the Glee movie in 3D.
Oh my!
Which she's in. And
so you're saying you should get a point just for having to do all that?
I should get a point having to sit through that show.
I am with that. Frankly. Okay.
I feel like I do remember her complaining about Katy Perry's Fireworks. Is that a song?
That makes sense.
That's on there.
Okay. Gold Digger?
Gold Digger. Oh my goodness, guys.
Guys?
Oh! It's happened.
Yay!
And with that, Steve takes the game.
Value guess.
Now, before we get to the festivities, I just want to do the tiebreaker stuff because it did work on it. Let's put a steel mill up for next season.
Wait, can you name a few more songs? Wait, sorry, can we hear a few more songs?
I tell you what, I'll go through the list and tell you the ones I know. Okay?
Okay.
Defying Gravity.
Shit, I had that.
Dog Days Are Over.
Yeah.
Empire State of Mind. Rolling. Heads Will Roll. Just the Way You Are.
I'm good. I'm great.
Like a Prayer. Living on a Prayer.
Ugh.
And others. Rolling in the Deep. And, Toxic, Thriller, and others. Okay, number one, everybody guess Price is Right rules. How many of the top 15 episodes of all time, as we did in round one, were series finales out of 15? Steve?
I'm going to say 8.
Sarah?
5.
I'll say 4.
The answer is all 15.
Shut up.
Guests get one steel meal. All right. Number two, lots of steel meals up for grabs for next season. The number of years ABC stopped using TGIF marketing before it picked it up again, minus the number of years it lasted in its second run. Years fallow, and then years it lasted in the second run. Subtract one from the other. Steve. I mean, Sarah, sorry.
Zero. Oh.
She says zero.
7.
3? 3.
Steve.
He said 2. 0 already.
He said 2 or 0, sorry.
Well, I said 0 first, but it was not my turn.
Okay. So your final answer, please, Steve.
2.
Correct answer was 0. The number of U.S. scripted Law & Order series plus Law & Order movies plus Law & Order PC video games. What's that number? Starting with Sarah again.
PC video games. I believe this is 9.
9. Tara.
I'm going to say 11.
Steve.
16.
And Tara, I guess the point, it's 12.
12? Hey.
All right, number four, the total number of shows that ran during must-see TV. Must-see TV shows. How many were there?
Who started?
This is two.
Who's starting? Okay.
Total number.
To me?
Yep, must-see TV shows.
23.
Sarah?
33.
Tara?
One.
Sarah gets it with 35. Two away. All right, number five, or round five question. The number of bar patron actors listed in the Cheers credits.
Whoa. In the opening credits?
In the opening credits, yeah.
Got it.
And this is for Steve first.
I'm going to say 10.
Four.
Yeah, it's four.
It's four, yep. Sarah got that one. Four. And I guess you get $100 or something, too, because you got it right on. Is that the way Price is Right works? All right. Number six.
I think so.
The number of singles from Glee that actually charted in the Billboard Top 40. How many were there? Tara.
25.
Steve.
19.
Sarah.
11.
25 wins, even though it's only half the number. 50 singles charted.
Whoa.
That's crazy.
All right. Did you keep track of all those studio meals, Tara? You got them all?
I did.
Excellent. Well, guys, it happened. It finally happened. Value guests win the season. Congratulations. Well done, everybody. Well done, Stee.
Well done, Mrs. Stee.
You'll prop your feet up, but for now let's eat up. Be our guest, be our guest, be our guest. Please be our guest.
All right, excellent guys, choice. That's it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We spied on season six of The Americans and celebrated a tiny triumph from that show's Margot Martindale before we went around the dial with stops at the daddy-rific Alex Incorporated, the 1111-rific Here and Now, the Zen Diaries of Gary Shandling, and season four of The Bridge. We return to the spy game as Stee made the successful case of Archer's tradecraft in its seventh episode, Skytanic. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Stee, playing for Value Guests, was the winner of this week's Game Time and the season for Value Ooh. Guests' first ever victory. Ooh. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano.
That's how annoying you are.
Sarah D. Bunting.
Blimps are terrible.
And Stephen Falk.
Cashing in my 401k.
Thanks for listening, everybody. And we'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot Great.
If you knew how tired I am, you wouldn't still be talking. I need sleep. Let me sleep.
Yay!
This has been a production of the Previously.tv Podcast Network.